it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Pac-12 Conference Commissioner Larry Scott asked the College Football Playoff Management Committee to double the field from 4 teams to 8 teams today. They said no deal. So at least he asked. That's out there. I think that's a positive that he asked. The Pac-12 is also trying to decide whether to play 20 or 22 games in basketball. We'll talk some Oregon State with Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. He's joining us now. Daschle, how you doing, man?
Good.
You paying attention to football? You're waiting for the schedule to come out. You and I were texting about this morning. I think you and I could figure out the schedule in about 15 minutes. What are they waiting for?
I don't know what the problem is. It seems pretty cut and dry. You're going to play your five division games. Three teams are going to play the rivalry game at home, so those teams will play the road game, in the crossover. So there's only three teams you can play. So really all you do is figure out, which one of those three teams do you play? And then you figure out, I'm assuming what they're going to do is play one Friday night game every week for 6 weeks. And so everybody will play one Friday night game and everybody, and then five Saturday games. I don't know. Unless a lot of this is TV negotiations and things like that. I mean, that's possible. That's what it could be. But yeah, it seems like there should have been a schedule Friday afternoon.
If we're trying to game the schedule for Oregon State to be most comfortable, obviously they would play the rivalry game with Oregon at the end of the regular season. But who are we going to open the season with if we're making out the schedule for Oregon State?
Well, I mean, originally they were going to start with Washington State to open the season, the Pac-12 season. So, I mean, I think that would be as ideal as any for Oregon State because that would be a good team to play in that, Washington State's going to be a little bit behind the eight ball knowing, they got the coaching changeover and they've gone through a lot of turnover at receiver and things like that. So I think Washington State would be the ideal team to start with. I don't think it's going to be Oregon, and I don't think you'd want to play Washington out of the chute. So probably either Washington State or Stanford, but I think, if they just stuck with what they were going to start with, Washington State, that would be okay with Oregon State.
Yeah, I like that. If we're putting that schedule together and we're gaming it for Oregon State, I like them starting with Washington State. Let's not give Nick Rolovich any time to get ready. Let's find him at his least comfortable, welcome him into the Pac-12. Then I like Stanford in week two. I like to see maybe Cal in week three. A chance for Oregon State to be 2-1 or even 3-0 if they're playing really well. Then let's put a crossover game in there. You like Arizona or Colorado is the crossover game if we're gaming the system for Oregon State?
Oh man, I'm forgetting who's got the home games in the South, and I believe the visiting teams would be USC, Arizona State, and I think it's Utah. I think Oregon State's going to have to play one of the tougher teams down there. So I don't know that they're going to get Colorado or UCLA or Arizona. So.
But if we're gaming the system and we can move the homes and aways, we can tinker with that. Who do we want them to play?
Oh, I think you want to play Colorado because it's another or Arizona, but I think Colorado because again they have a first year coach and new system and all that. I would think Colorado would be one, but Arizona and UCLA would be right up there because I mean, they got some. They both they played Arizona and UCLA last year and put up over 50 on both those teams. So I think they'd have to feel pretty good about playing both those programs.
The offense, I'm not worried about. Even though Tristan Jebbia has only got one game at quarterback, I'm not worried about that offense. Jonathan Smith will figure that out. What will this defense look like?
Well, you would hope it's going to take a step forward from last year, which was improving. I mean, it certainly wasn't the best defense in the conference. It wasn't even probably middle of the road, but it definitely wasn't the worst defense in the league like it was Jonathan's first year. So you would hope that they would be able to continue to improve the pressure on the quarterback, which was probably their strength last year. And then they brought in they're going to have a lot of new faces in the secondary, and you would think that out of that group of six or seven new faces, some of them are JC transfers. Some of those guys are going to be real impact players. Now, three of them were redshirt, played last year in the system, so they have a year to know what they're doing. So I would think that you would hope they're going to take a step forward from last year and maybe get to where they're maybe middle of the conference in defense, where they're not the best, but you can count on them. You could count on three or four Saturdays out of the season. I think that would be a step forward.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian with us, covers Oregon State. Add Scott Barnes on this radio show earlier in the week. He talked about the hole in his budget. He's still putting pencil to paper to figure out what seven games means to him. I also asked him about Reser Stadium, and he says, I thought it was really interesting the semantics he used. He talked about it being a campus project, not really like in terms of an athletic department project. Are they getting significant funding from elsewhere on the campus? Is that why this project is immune to the pandemic and the economics of the pandemic project?
Well, they're selling it as a multi-purpose facility, and so from that standpoint, yes, Scott is selling it as a campus project because it just doesn't make sense anymore to have a football stadium. It needs to be more because the cost is too high, and so yeah, that's why the university is involved. And where it comes in, I don't know. They've talked about it. Maybe there's some medical component to it. Maybe there's some classes or some sort of student gathering center or something like that. Or maybe it's even an outside business that is using this part of the stadium as part of their business. And Scott hasn't been all that forthcoming on those sorts of details. And for good reason. He until you get that nailed down, you don't really want to talk too much about it. But that's the reason. It's because they really need to make this more than just a 6 to 7 Saturdays a year facility. It's got to be something they can use, 250 to 325 days out of the year.
I also think they're doing a lot of talk right now about, hey, the finances of athletics nationally are out of whack. And I think he's got to be sensitive about talking about, yeah, that project's on schedule. Like, we're still going to spend $100+ million on it. We're good. That's immune to this. While he's also telling his ticket holders and his donors, we need your support. We need, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's a fine line for him to walk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where we are 18 months from now, because pretty much everybody in Scott's shoes right now are saying that, we need to reset in college athletics. We've gotten ahead of ourselves, spending too much money, blah, blah, blah. But, let's see what happens 18 months from now when the money starts coming back in and things are starting to look good again and the TV contracts are nice and fat again and whatnot. That's what I'm most interested in. So I want to see if they walk the talk or if it's just talk.
We're talking to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. A successful Oregon State season, I know this is a weird year and a lot of people are throwing it out, but it looks like they'll be bowl eligible. Everyone will be bowl eligible. If they went 3-3 in those six games, you know, got to that championship weekend as a 500 team, I kind of think Oregon State would celebrate that as, hey, we took a step forward. Look at the conference success we're having. We are in the middle ground in our conference.
Yeah, I think I've said that. They want to keep, you know, don't get blown out or keep it to a minimum, you know, keep it to one game and, you know, try to win as close to half your games as possible, whether that's 3-4, 4-3, something like that. Of course, that'd be a great season because with seven games and say they were 3-4, if you take that non-conference schedule that they would have had, you have to think they would have been 2-1 at a minimum during that. And, you know, who knows with Oklahoma State, maybe you're 3-0, but at least 2-1. So that's five wins right there. I think, you know, with a new quarterback and just about everybody coming back next year, I think you're looking at that'd be a pretty good season with three wins.
Dashiell, Oregon State's best player on either side of the ball this season is fill in the blank.
No, it's Rashid for sure. Hamika Rashid. I mean, he's going to get the attention of all the offenses they face. You know, how are they going to block him? You know, are they going to run at him, run away from him? And that's really going to help Oregon State, I think, because they're not empty at that position at all. That's their deepest position is outside linebacker. If teams are able to take, you know, Rashid out of the games, they got other guys that can do some damage. So, I mean, that's why I think he's their best player. I mean, Jefferson's going to have an impact on the offensive side, but I think it's Rashid that really is going to stir that drink on the defensive side.
You and I have both been looking at stadiums in the Pac-12. What are they going to allow? They said out in that initial release, no fans. Oregon's Rob Mullins has since come off that and said, well, maybe there's a window for fans, family members to be in the stadium. Now in Lane County, you've got the threat that they could go back to level one. I believe they probably get an exception for the football game, but how closely should people be watching what's going on in Benton County and Lane County when it comes to whether or not those games actually get played?
Well, the numbers in Benton County still seem to be pretty good, so I don't think that's going to be a big concern. I think football is going to be okay unless the numbers just go crazy bad. But yeah, as far as fans getting in the games, I don't see that happening. I mean, you talked to Mullins yesterday, and I reached out to the governor's office, and they pretty much said no way to any fans, whether they're the father and mother of a player or coach's wife or anything. They're just not getting into the stadium this year. But I think the games will get played, and like I said, unless there's just some big turnaround in numbers that, you know, they can't overcome.
Dashiell, you're the best. I appreciate you making time. Have a great day.
All right, we'll see you.
There's Nick Dashiell of the Oregonian. I don't know if you'd want to be in the stadium. I think there's a lot of people this college football season who are going to look forward to being at home, in the comfort of your living room, in the safety of your living room, doing your thing. I think that more than ever this season, I think it takes a lot of pressure off you. It takes a lot of pressure off the tailgate. You're going to have to tailgate your own house. I hope you tailgate in your driveway and you throw the Nerf ball around with your kids. Do something. Don't sit inside and just be isolated and watch your game by yourself in a dark room. Don't do that. I'll tell you why that's not healthy for you next. Every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Meet me at the
water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
All right, guys, I found a study that shows that isolation from COVID-19 has the potential to weaken your heart, your lungs, and impair your brain function. Study shows that being isolated, not working out, not being months and months of isolation is not good for your wellness. I mean, is this common sense or is this a news story, in your opinion?
I think it's common sense that you should still be getting your exercise, whether that's just like a 15-minute walk or whatever it is to raise your heartbeat for like 30 minutes. Is it 30 minutes a day or something like that?
Yeah. When you're not exercising, you're not raising your heart rate. When your heart isn't pumping as hard, it gets weaker. I mean, that's just common sense. But it's interesting when you're inactive because this study showed not only a month can hurt you, but a week of being housebound can hurt you as well. That inactivity can undo a lot of progress that you've made in the gym. It takes you 1 week to lose the same amount of muscle that it takes you. It can take you as much as a month to gain. You also gain weight. Your posture's affected. Your sleep suffers. And your brain slows down if you're sedentary. So keep moving. Get outside. Get some exercise. Pick up something that...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.